WGXC 90.7 from the Hudson Studio in New York. I'm Nancy Marin, your host for the Social Graces Program. The Social Graces Program covers all things pertaining to etiquette, manners, and protocol. Today's guest on the Social Graces Program is Kim Bach, owner of Verdigris Tea Shop and Chocolate Bar. And they are located on 135 Warren Street in Hudson. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Did I pronounce your shop correct?
It's Verdigris.
Verdigris. What did I say?
Oh, sometimes mostly people pronounce the S, but it's silent. It's
Verdigris.
French.
Verdigris. That's easy. So, good afternoon, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Nancy.
I wanted to add, I've been to your shop many times. You didn't know who I was, but I've been in there many times, and it's a really great shop. It's interesting. It's a big space. You have a lot going on. And I guess what I wanted to ask you about is, how in the world did you ever get into the tea and chocolate business?
Well, I kind of backed into it. My mother was in the tea business for 18 years. She had a shop in a ski resort in Utah, of all places, Park City, Utah. And at 80-plus years, she decided that she was done, and if one of her children would take over the tea shop, she would pack it up and send it to them. And so I was the one that raised my hand first.
Well, great. 80 years?
Yes, yes. She's still going strong at 90, but she's out of the tea business, and I'm into it.
Okay, great. So, who trained you in tea? Because you don't just buy a bunch of boxes of tea and sell them. You need to know your teas and you know, the history of tea and.
Right. I'd like to say it was a family business. My mother's an herbalist, and she had a lot of herbs and other things, as well as tea, in her shop. And I would help her from time to time in the shop when I was visiting. So I feel like I just learned tea being around it. And then when I started Verdigris, I certainly spent a lot of time researching tea, talking to people about tea. I unfortunately haven't had the good luck to travel to many different countries yet.
That was my next question was, have you traveled the world to know all of the different kinds of tea? But maybe you'll get to that later.
Yes, I grew up in South America, so I did have the option of learning about mate and some of the other tea-like drinks that are drunk in that part of the world. And I have traveled through Europe, but not to many tea producing countries yet.
And so South America, you live there?
I did. I grew up throughout South America.
Huh. But you don't have an accent of that kind?
No.
Okay, well. So of all the types of teas, what tea do you like the most?
Well, I kind of go back and forth from being a traditionalist and liking a really nice black English breakfast type tea. But then the other side of me, in the evenings, I like an herbal tea, a rooibos-based herbal blend. So I have the luxury of owning a shop where I can try one, two, three different teas a day. And by trying them, I get to learn a lot about them and how to talk about them and help other people figure out what it is that they like.
I can understand that, because I'm sure people walk in and go, you know, they know Lipton tea and they know, you know, a few teas, but you've got how many? How many in your shop?
About 145 teas, and none of them taste like Lipton.
And you do iced tea too?
We do in the summer mostly. We do a lot of iced teas.
Mm-hmm. Like maybe the mint and something, you know, refreshing like that.
Yeah, a lot of the black teas that have fruit in them, a pomegranate rose hip tea or a mint tea, is always a nice iced tea in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Are you ever thinking about maybe expanding, like having another store somewhere?
No, I think having expanded too fast in the beginning with the original Verdigris that was on 3rd Street. This is just the perfect size store. It's big enough for the town of Hudson and a few other environs, but that's enough. I do get a lot of people asking me, when are you going to open up one in my town?
Right. Well, let's see. We were talking before we went on the air about this Wall Street Journal piece that they had about different kinds of tea and tea customs. And I guess I had held on to the article in hopes that I would have a tea connoisseur on the Social Graces program at some time. And here you are.
Oh, good. I'm glad
I saved it. But I wanted you to tell me first, before we get into anything else, how do you make the perfect cup of tea?
Well, it's all about time and temperature. So although I also have to say it's about your quality of water. So if you start with a really fresh cup of cold water that you boil to the right temperature, and then you pour it over the right tea and leave the tea leaves in the cup, in the pot, for the right amount of time, you should have the perfect cup of tea.
So if you were going to do different teas, require different steeping time, or is it universal with each tea?
They do. They all require different steeping times. There's some general rules. A black tea would be a 5-minute steep, or a really high-end Japanese green tea would only be a minute and a half to 2-minute steep with not quite as hot of water. And when you have a cup of tea at Verdigris, we always put a tea timer down in front of you. And it's not a digital one. It's a sand timer. And we make you sit and watch until your 5 or 3 minutes is up. And it's a real conversation stopper.
Everybody
watches the timer.
Yes. And what's the tea that you would have to steep for the longest time?
A black tea. The English teas are, or I should call them Chinese teas or Indian teas, are the ones that you would steep for 5+ minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was hoping, too, that we would talk about these different brew do's. This was out of the a Wall Street Journal about 6 or 7 months ago, and they try to go through with the different kinds of teas. Take tea like a native from Beijing to Birmingham. And so I was hoping maybe you could, do you know about the different teas, not just how to steep them or whatnot, but like it says here, tea is so important to Japanese culture that there are terms for native ocho as opposed to non-Japanese varieties, kocha. Do you know anything about that?
No, I'm not familiar with those terms, but most Japanese or Chinese teas have very specific rituals around how to brew, how to pour, how to drink, and they're very interesting. It depends on what part of Japan or China that the tea comes from, what kind of clay pot or tea ceremony is part of that culture, that area. And so, you know, for a modernized culture, tea drinking culture, a lot of those things are interesting to know about. But of course, we just want to put our tea in a cup and wait the approximate correct time.
Yes. So would you think Japanese or the United Kingdom have the most formalities brewing their tea?
Oh, I'd say the Japanese. The United Kingdom might be formal in some of their, you know, tea times, but I think the tea leaves themselves, the variety of teas in a country like Japan, are infinitely more interesting. And, you know, their high-end shade dried teas like a Gyokuro. The leaves are so precious that you really want to make sure that you use the right temperature of water and that you don't leave the teas in for as long and that you get 2 to 3 servings, flushes, we call them, out of the same tea leaves. And they're pretty to look at. They're all very different looking leaves, different smelling and tasting leaves. So I find the Japanese tea leaves very interesting.
Hmm. And how many do they have over there?
Well, it's all the same leaf, whether it's a black tea, a green tea, a white tea. It's all Camellia sinensis. It's all the same leaf the world around. If it isn't Camellia sinensis, it's not called tea. It's called a tisane, which is a tea-like drink, but every one of those tea leaves is the same leaf. There are some varieties in the bush, but it's what you do with them after you pick them. So in Japan, there isn't a lot of roasting or toasting or oxidation of those tea leaves. That's why they're green. And by the time you get to a really rugged Chinese black tea, or the Indian teas especially, are more machine processed and roasted and allowed to turn black.
So the Japanese just pick off the leaves and they don't do anything to it.
They'll let them naturally dry in the shade. They'll toss them a little bit because the breaking up of the tea leaves is what causes the oxidation, but not so much that you lose the greenness of them. And people either really love green tea or they don't love green tea. Mm-hmm. It's a very specific taste.
It's funny how they figured all of that out, you know, to do it in just that perfect way.
They've had many, many years of figuring that out.
Green tea is, as everybody knows, is probably the best for your health.
Yes, that and white tea, which is the difference between green and white is that white teas are the very new leaves and bud picked from the top of the plant. So they're brand new little babies, and they don't do much to those. When you drink a white tea, it's almost like, looks like water. There's not much color to it. It has a kind of nutty flavor, but it's they're using white tea now in a lot of products, from toothpaste to skincare products to shampoos, for its high oxidation processes.
Do you sell white tea in your shop?
Yes, it's on the pricier end of teas. Mm-hmm. Some of the green teas as well are up there in the price range, but I get a lot of requests because there's a lot of health conscious shoppers.
Mm-hmm. So for an ounce, let's say, would you sell it in ounces or?
Yes, we sell most of our tea in loose tea. We do have some in tea bags, but loose tea is much better for you than what you get in a tea bag, mm-hmm. which has gotten better in the last 10 or 12 years in that they're using bigger tea bags instead of getting the tea dust that you would get in a Lipton bag originally.
That's always in the bottom of the box.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you're getting a finer, a full leaf in the bigger tea bags. But we like to sell a lot of things loose, and we sell by the ounce. And an ounce can run anywhere from $2.50 up to $10 or $12
an ounce. Like the white tea would probably be
about $6 an ounce.
Okay. And what's the most expensive ounce that you sell?
Well, I have Japanese pearls, which are hand-rolled green tea leaves rolled around a jasmine flower.
That just sounds neat.
They are elegant and fun to watch open up, and a very high-end, lovely, they're sometimes called dragon tears, beautiful, beautiful tea leaves.
And where do you import those from Japan, or where do you...
I use three actually different importers that I like coming through Canada or the West Coast, depending on what country they're coming from. But they're mostly small groups that are, that I use that are importing.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about Japan, Here's one. Black tea is served. This is in Turkey. And I don't know if you serve this kind of procedure or not, but black tea is served in small curved glasses, a lot of them, as locals can consume dozens of cups a day. To avoid odd looks, add sugar only, no milk or cream.
Well, I recently did a little research on Turkish tea because Olana was doing an event that had a lot to do with Turkey, and they wanted to have some Turkish tea. And so, yes, they like to drink tea in zarfs, the glass cups that have a metal handle around them, or the small rounded glasses that you just plop a sugar cube in the bottom. Mm-hmm. And it's a very strong black tea. It's lovely.
Is it? Do you like that?
I do.
Yeah?
I do.
And then there's one. Here's the United Kingdom, which, confusing though it may be, in Britain, high tea is not a formal tea. It began as a working class meal and evolved into a Sunday meal for the wealthy when servants were off.
That's true. I recently found out that high tea relates to the height of the table that you're sitting at. So a high tea is not traditionally a formal event. It's what you would drink, you know, at dinner or at lunchtime, where you'd put down a platter of food and have your tea at the dining room table, as opposed to the afternoon tea that you would have at a coffee table.
And isn't that something? Because I always thought high tea was where everybody wore, you know, a really fancy suit, and then they put their pinky up in the, you know, that's what I just thought it was, high tea.
I think it's turned into that, and I get a lot of requests for, oh, do you do high tea? But
they don't understand what they're really asking for.
Well, they know that they're asking for what you were describing,
yes,
that you're sitting at an elegant table and you have a three-tiered tray with little sandwiches without crusts and scones,
yeah,
and things.
Uh-huh. So do you ever do that?
We used to. It's a lot of work, and certainly I have a, you know, lovely chef that can do those things. But no, we're kind of more of a scaled down tea shop, and mm-hmm, don't do high teas at this point.
Well, you were telling me in the other room before we got on the air that you have a pastry chef that you employ. That's so in your shop. You have all of these wonderful scones and little lemon meringue things and stuff like that, right?
Yes, Regina Simmons, my chef, does everything from event cakes and wedding cakes that we don't serve in the shop. But then by the slice, we have cakes and pies and tarts. And then she does the scones and the biscottis and the cupcakes. So,
yeah, I think I've had some of the pie before, or
lovely,
the cake.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great shop. It really is.
Thank you.
You're on the corner, aren't you?
On the corner of Warren and Second, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking that. So it says afternoon tea, this is back to the United Kingdom. Afternoon tea is the proper name for the late day pick-me-up. Never carry a teacup without a saucer. Which we don't even probably use saucers anymore, do we?
Not really.
We just have that big mug, you know.
Right.
It's just like probably three cups of tea to them.
Right.
And let's see what else the British do. Don't worry about the old-fashioned rule, milk in first. It was meant to prevent thin porcelain from cracking at the touch of the hot liquid.
Oh, that's interesting. That would make sense, actually.
Had you ever heard that before?
No, I've had people ask me what that tradition is.
Yeah.
Do you put in the milk first or afterwards? But that makes perfect sense.
That's very interesting. So now we're going to Chinese tea. Chinese tea drinkers tend to reuse their leaves throughout the day.
Yes.
So it starts off strong, and then by the end of the day, you can hardly tell you're drinking tea, probably.
Well, the green teas are traditionally meant to have two, three, sometimes up to 10 infusions. If it's a pu'er, which is a Chinese aged tea, you can keep pouring water into those leaves, and each cup is different and not necessarily weaker, but different. The first one in a pu'er tea, the first serving is one I would usually toss because it's too strong and earthy for me, but each subsequent serving is lovely.
And what did you say that was called?
Those are called pu'er teas, P-U-E-H-R, and they're usually cave aged in China.
Really?
Yeah, and they can go up to 25, 30 years old teas that have been aged for that long.
My gosh.
And those get really pricey.
I bet.
That's my second highest price tea, is a lovely 5-year old pu'er.
Yeah. So, let's see. To fit in, put your tea into a vacuum flask and refill it with hot water as you run low. It is considered rude to pour for yourself before serving others. Will that make sense?
Yes.
If you want to be traditional about it, you can gently tap your fingers on the table to say thank you. Two taps is the norm because it symbolizes a repeated bow.
Oh, how nice.
Do you think they really still do that?
I think they probably do. I think depending on where you're taking tea, the traditions like that are...
That's pretty neat, isn't it?
It is. It is. And the Chinese have these wonderful clay pots in all different shapes and artistic designs that they use. And the more you use that same clay pot, the more it becomes infused with the taste of the tea. The clay itself gets infused with the taste of the tea. And a lot of times they'll put the teapot in a tray and pour the tea over the pot to warm it up before... filling the pot.
So they would only use that one certain kind of tea, though. They wouldn't mix teas in that pot if they wanted to be, you know, with, what am I trying to say? You wouldn't put any other kind of tea except black tea in that pot for its life of its expectancy.
Right. Well, here's a fact. Most of the tea that is grown in China and turned into black tea, that as opposed to the green tea that is drunk throughout China, is exported. So that black tea, or what they call red tea, is only an export product. Most of China is drinking green tea. So what they're putting in that clay pot would probably be the same green tea day after day.
And they would never put another kind of tea in there.
No, but you don't want to do that even here in the United States. You don't want to use a pot that you have had coffee in, let's say, and then put tea in it, because the tea will always taste like coffee. So you really have to be a purist and keep your teas separate. You can use different teas in regular ceramic pots, but the Chinese clay pots, I think, are just so...
Because they're porous?
Porous,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, doesn't it? So, did we talk about Turkey, didn't we?
We did.
Okay, and we've gone to the United Kingdom.
Right.
And China, and Japan.
The other tea that's really, really popular with us is the rooibos South African red teas. And again, as I said, they're not really tea, they're a tisane, because they don't have the Camellia sinensis leaf. But they're another kind of tea that's very interesting. It comes from South Africa. And that tea has become very, very popular. It's flavored up with a lot of different fruit and herb flavors as well.
Do you have that in your shop?
I do. I have a lot of my herbal blends mixed with honeybush or rooibos tea. It's just a wonderful thing to drink by itself or blend it in with another herb.
And do you mix your own and like experiment, or do you have a book that says put this much in this and that and that? And
I do some blending for the restaurants that I sell tea to, but it would take a whole nother room with special equipment to be a blender. And there's so many great, great blenders here in the United States or that I can import from. So I've stayed out of that business so far.
I think the only one we haven't talked about was Germany, which I don't even think, you don't think of Germans drinking tea, you know, it's more beer.
You don't, but Germany, tea is very, very popular in Germany. And Germany actually is one of the biggest importers in the world of teas, of fine teas.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were all just coffee drinkers and, and beer. So do you have any German tea in your shop?
No, tea isn't grown in Germany. That's not one of the countries that grows tea, but they're in the business of getting it to the rest of us.
I see. Well, I'll tell you, this has been so interesting, something, you know, different to talk about. I don't think a lot of people, you know, maybe this will get them interested in the different kinds of teas and maybe getting off coffee a little bit.
Great.
That always... too much coffee is not good.
Well, we like coffee at Verdigris Tea as well, but we are a tea shop. And thank you, Nancy, for having me on
and
your show.
Just wanted to thank you for coming. And I was going to say, you have chocolates in there too.
We do. We serve a lot of regional and local even chocolates. We try to specialize in local and regional chocolate bars, chocolate, and we serve a really nice hot chocolate.
And you have a lot of really nice doodads and knickknacks.
Everything you need for
yes,
tea.
Yes, yes. You could stay there all day. Well, thank you so much again, and I'll be seeing you.
Thank you.